Welcome to A Lindell's Choice, a place where we explore the art of living our best life and the challenges we face along the way. A journey is seen through the experiences of a husband, dad, coach, engineer, entrepreneur, athlete. I'm your host, Team Lindell. We're back for another week, and it's a week of loneliness for me. My family, my wife and son, they are at space camp this week. I'm like still trying to figure out why this is a thing. Shouldn't they be in school? Shouldn't they be learning like reading, writing, and arithmetic at the grade school level? I mean, I know it's middle school and they want to do like field trips and stuff, but space camp, really? Can we do space camp in the summertime? Why do we have to do it during school time? I just don't understand. Anyway, the worst part about it is it's the week before spring break. Why don't you do this like during spring break then? No. The kids are going to be out for most of the week for space camp, come back, have a complete week off of school for spring break, and then go back to school. I really don't understand this. It baffles my mind. It's a small private school. I mean, I'm paying quite a bit for tuition, and here I am paying extra to send my son and wife to space camp. That's crazy. My soccer team had its first game of the season. It went well. They won 7-1. Which was exciting. It was always good to start off on the right foot. At the same time, this team could be better. I mean, currently I'm struggling with the parents, and that's not all the parents. It's just enough of them that it's becoming a bit of a problem. There is almost like a recreational soccer mentality among some of the parents where it's like, well, you know, we're not going to be at this practice. Sorry. We got play practice, or we got some other thing going on. We can't make the game. We got something else going on. I tried to set up a second tournament. I gave them a couple options for May, and they were like, no, that's Derby week, or no, that's Mother's Day week. It's like, really? Really? Why can't we just pick a weekend and go? It's soccer. We've got to like take this a little more seriously than that. I know with my son, it's like soccer is kind of like the priority, and then we fit in things around it. That's the whole purpose of kind of select soccer, of club soccer, but it is what it is. I mean, to kind of give you an illustration, I'm on week four. We've just finished week four of practicing, and I have yet to have a practice with full attendance. In fact, I've had very few practices with more than 10 kids at a day, which is crazy. Just looking at what is selected going forward, I'm not sure I'll have attendance until May. Oh, man. And at times, I'm struggling with the kids as well because they don't take it seriously. I'm wondering if that's kind of a reflection of the parents' take on the seriousness of it. I get the kids can goof off, and that's fine. It's just there's an unseriousness. We will set up a drill, and they just kind of half do the drill. And it's like, hey guys, can we take this seriously? And then they take it somewhat serious. But it's not their default behavior. And that's a bit of a problem. You know, it's going to be what it's going to be. But the real problem is, kind of long term, they're not going to develop as fast as the teams around them. So they're going to go backwards as they go forward. Which is unfortunate. For the standpoint of, this is a pretty talented team. They're not like super talented because they don't finish on the details and stuff, but there's enough talent here that they could put together a pretty good team if they stayed together. Until that attitude changes among them, I just don't see how that's going to happen. And that's disappointing. It's disappointing as a coach because you're trying to help them succeed. And to some extent, I want them to succeed because my son's a couple years older. These kids will be playing high school with my son, and I'm hoping to get my son a pretty good high school team if we get enough of these club teams going and get enough players who can play together. We'll see. It's a struggle. It's just been a struggle this season. Again, there's just not full buy-in from the team, and I don't know what to do about that. There's really nothing you can do about it, but it does become frustrating. It becomes hard to plan for practices, too. Last night, I had 8 kids show up. Kind of hard to do any type of like full-sided prep work with 8 kids. It is what it is. But that really wasn't the only problem I had this week. I found myself earlier in the week in a state of severe procrastination. And procrastination is something that I fall into occasionally, where I'll get lost in something. I'm in cruise control, but the cruise control is going down a path that's not very productive. Traditionally, this has been something like Minecraft. It's very easy to get sucked into Minecraft and there'll be 6 or 7 hours later. Like this time, it was aerodynamics. I got lost in a rabbit hole looking at aerodynamics with bikes. One of the things I've been trying to do is reduce the number of bikes I have. My wife tends to complain because I have too many bikes. Because people ask, how many bikes should you have? It's N plus one. They should always have one more. But realistically, I would like to get back to one bike that I can ride and race with. I have an older Aero road bike that I've been racing with. It, unfortunately, is rim braked. It's just older tech. It's tubulars where we got to glue them on. So it's kind of a pain to work with tires. I would like to sell that bike. And then the question becomes, I've got my nice road bike. I've got some decent wheels on it. But is that good enough to race triathlon against the people with TT bikes? And that was the search I went down, is how much time am I going to lose on a road bike frame versus a TT frame? Because I know the wheel differences aren't going to be different because I'm going to probably be rolling same wheels I would roll on a TT bike. But what is the frame? How much do you lose on that frame? Do I need to think about getting an Aero road bike? Or can I just clean up maybe the front end of my bike, change the handlebars, make them more aerodynamic? I don't have an answer to that question. It looks like the frames do have somewhat of a significant effect, which could be just kind of looking at almost a minute on a tri race, which is that's a good chunk of time. So I'm going to have to consider, like, okay, maybe I need to just whittle down to one Aero bike and just go get a new Aero bike. But for now, I'm going to stick with my road bike. I'm going to sell off my other one. And if I race, I'll just race with my road bike for now until I settle this dispute. Although, right now, I'm not looking to race this year, so it shouldn't be a real problem. But anyway, back to the problem at hand. Getting lost in something is not always the end of the world. But if you're doing it to avoid doing some task that you need to do, that's when it begins to problem. Because what I realized is while I was playing around with aerodynamics on bikes, that I realized I was stalling to work on my History in 6 podcast. One of my other shows I do is History in 6 Minutes. And I was feeling anxious about recording it. And that's just irrational because I generally enjoy creating content like this. I didn't understand why I was feeling anxious, why I was feeling trepidation at recording a podcast. And it was crippling my ability to do anything because I'm in this rabbit hole. It's one thing to like be procrastinating on something I need to do. It's another thing to shut down completely and not be productive in any aspect of my life. So I had to sit down and ask myself, why? What's going on here? The only thing I could come up with was self-doubt. For some reason, I was afraid of creating new episodes. The question is, why? I went out and did some research, and there's a number of reasons that self-doubt can be created. One is societal pressures. Your environment creates expectations for success, and that can be potentially overwhelming. You're pressured by, say, your parents or friends to do well. You're pressured by what you see on social media to do better. And this pressure to excel in all these aspects of your life can make you feel like you're coming up short all the time, which would be a good reason to have self-doubt. Another area is unhealthy comparisons. If we're comparing ourselves to other, especially on social media, that can be another breeding ground for self-doubt. Neither of those really strike me as being a problem here. I generally, my problem generally comes from self-criticism, which gets to the next one, perfectionism, striving to be perfect, flawless, sets you up for self-doubt. I mean, perfection is really very unrealistic, but anytime you come up short of what you're expecting, you can feel like a major failure, which would obviously chip away your confidence. Which takes us to our next one, which is fear of failure. The fear of messing up is a major source of self-doubt. Can prevent you from taking chances, trying new things, hindering your growth. You know, and this is a real thing because there are a lot of times where I have a feeling where I have failed, which I may not have failed, but I didn't live up to my expectations. Like my IT consulting company, I thought it would blossom into another IBM. It really didn't. I mean, it's done okay. Makes a living for myself, but it never exploded the way I wanted to. I opened a bike shop. It failed. My tri coaching never expanded like I hope. I wrote a book on triathlon. And it hasn't sold 100 copies yet. You know, as an athlete, I don't have elite genetics. I'm very average. I make the most of what I have, and that's allowed me to win some races in my age group. But when the really elite athletes come, I just get stomped. You know, you start looking around your house, it isn't probably in the shape it needs to be. I got a back deck that needs to be restained. I've got the house that needs to be repainted. I've got a pool that needs to be redone. And these things have been sitting around for a while, and they're not getting done. You know, I found my referee skills are not where they need to be when I did the older kids. So that fear of failing in the future is a real thing. The last one was lack of self-compassion, where you're overly critical of yourself. Gee, surprise. You know, you should be treating yourself with kindness and understanding. If a friend came to you with some of these problems, you'd be like, oh man, yeah, I understand, and really kind of help. But we don't give ourselves that same break. You know, one thing that I didn't find in my research that I also applies at least to me is running out of time to do well in something. You know, I'm no longer young. Am I making the right decision? Because the number of chances I have continue to dwindle with every passing year. It's just the nature of the beast. And I think this is where I find myself. When I look at these podcasts, I have to worry about what the outside world feels about it, because that opinion will drive the success of these episodes. I'm sure that's playing a part in this as well. So I understand how self-doubt can occur. But why is it so crippling? Why am I getting stuck doing things that are mostly pointless? You know, I went out and did more research, and there was a couple of reasons that I found. One, that if you have doubts about what you're doing, it can undermine motivation. That makes sense. You doubt your abilities, it's hard to feel motivated to take action. If you doubt, like in this case, if I doubt my ability to create good content, it's hard to feel motivated to go and create that content. I mean, if I'm going to fail anyway, why even try? I mean, that's a pretty good reason to prevent you from pursuing goals or even reaching your full potential. It can fuel negativity bias. You know, we're wired to focus on negative things. Well, self-doubt feeds into that negativity, allowing you to dwell on your flaws, overlook the things that you do well, distorting your view of yourself and what you are capable of doing. It can breed failure. Man, fear of failing can be paralyzing. If our doubt convinces us that failure is inevitable, why take the risk? Why try new things? You know, it can promote comparisons. Self-doubt can lead to compare yourself to others, where you'll come up short in your own mind, reinforcing those feelings of inadequacy. It also weakens self-compassion. If you doubt yourself, you tend to be harsher on yourself than you would be with, say, a friend. If we're not compassionate with ourselves, how can we quickly bounce back from setbacks and keep moving forward? This is a problem. The question is how do we deal with the problem? And for me, I like to turn to Stoicism. What are the Stoic tools that are available to me to be able to solve these problems. One area is the dichotomy of control. Control what you can control. The Stoics like to distinguish between things you can control and things you can't. When we talk about doubting ourselves, when we talk about fear of failure and all these things, we're generally dwelling on aspects of our life that are uncontrollable. If I'm thinking about a podcast and I'm worried what other people think, I can't control what other people think. I can't control how people perceive it. All I can control is my actions. All I can control is how I respond to the world around me, my thoughts. If I can get myself to focus on what I can control, my effort, my attitude, I can go back into action and potentially reduce self-doubt. Another tool that they use is negative visualization. If we can visualize potential setbacks or failures before they happen, we can rehearse how we're going to act in these scenarios, which can do a couple things. One, it can desensitize us to the actual failure. I know we talked about desensitizing in previous episodes, but if I go through failure enough, I become desensitized to failure itself. I no longer fear it. It's just something that's there. The second thing it does is it allows me to potentially develop coping mechanisms in advance. So if those things do happen, I have ways to deal with it. This way, my self-doubt would be less likely to paralyze me when faced with challenges. Another thing you can do from the Stoics tree is your ethics, focusing on ethics. Virtue, wisdom, courage, justice, and temperance. And we focus on living virtuously, in and of itself can boost our sense of purpose and self-worth, which would obviously diminish self-doubt. There's amore fati, love of fate. This principle encourages us to accept things that are outside of our control. I can't control the events that are happening, but I can control how I respond to them. And by accepting these challenges as part of life rather than fighting against them, I can reduce the stress, allow me to focus on those things that I can influence. This kind of goes hand in hand with controlling what you can control. If I accept what's going on around me, then I can focus on the things that I can control. The last tool the Stoics had was memento mori. Remember that you too will die. Considering your mortality can put things in perspective. I'm not talking about dwelling on death morbidly, but using the fact that you only have so many days on this planet to focus you on what truly matters and make the most of your time. The focus on focusing on doing things that are meaningful will definitely reduce self-doubt. So how am I going to go about, how did I go about dealing with my problem? It really started with journaling. I do like journaling as a tool for reflection. If you can spend 30 minutes or an hour every so often and just think through your problem, think deeply about some problem, you can begin to find the solutions. In this case, it allowed me to be able to go through, examine my thoughts, and I begin to identify these patterns of self-doubt. By going through and itemizing these issues, I can then challenge them with Stoic principles and begin to get things going in the right direction again. For me, the challenge is just getting moving again. I always think of Newton's first law of motion. An object at rest stays at rest. An object in motion stays in motion unless acted upon by outside forces. So what I need to do is get away from the rabbit hole, the activities that I'm procrastinating on, and just get started on my action. Once I get going, things never seem as bad as they do before you get to them. But you got to take that first step. Like tools like negative visualization, for this case, don't really work for me. I like to use the negative visualization for things like anger, more transactional emotions, because I can play them in my head. You know, I can play in my head a car pulling over in front of me or doing something stupid and how I deal with that. I can work through those. But for something that's bigger than this, I don't really use negative visualization. For me, it's more of I need to start thinking about controlling what I can control. You know, my fear of failure, my fear of doubting what people are going to think of this, these are just opinions I have. In this case, about something that hasn't even happened yet. Why am I accepting? Why am I wasting my time with something I can't control? Fate's going to do what fate's going to do. I need to focus on my attitude, my effort. I need to stop worrying about the irrational and just focus on what's next. Put my energy there. Just do it. I mean, Nike would be proud with that, right? Marketing for the win. But that's really what it's about, is I need to focus on what's the first thing, what's the next thing I need to do? Just maybe open an application. Maybe just, in this case, turn on my recording software. Just begin recording. Just go down that road. Once I get going, I'm usually good to go. But I also want to keep in my back pocket memento mori, mortality. You know, most people might think of this as depressing, but it's really not. You know, knowing that nothing lasts forever helps put things in perspective, helps you enjoy the current moment more. You know, for me, like bike riding, I love to go bike riding. If there's a day where I struggle to go bike riding, I'll just say to myself, you know, there's going to be a day when you can't bike ride anymore. You know what? That makes the bike ride feel a lot more appealing. And it makes that ride more enjoyable. And I need to remember this when I get stuck and I get stuck in procrastination. Hey, you know, there's going to be a day I can't do this at all. Let's enjoy the moment we have now. You know, for me, that's a powerful tool to get us over the hump, engage the day, and truly enjoy the moment. So for me, my takeaway from this, because I did successfully get going again, but I do feel these pangs. I mean, I've identified this emotion, and I've realized what it feels like. I felt it a couple times since this initial one, and now I have tools that I can use to counterbalance these negative emotions. I can focus on what I can control. I can focus on more mortality, basically allowing me to break away from the cruise control, the destructive cruise control. It allows my rational self to regain control of my actions that have been hijacked by my emotional self and my emotional self's access to cruise control, because it sent me down this path. It tries to send me down these paths. I now have a feeling for what that feels like. And now I have ways to step in and begin to deal with those emotions so that I can stay on track, that I can be more productive. I hope that helps you in some way or another. And if you've enjoyed this episode, tell a friend about us. And if you haven't already, subscribe to get future content. And as always, have a great day if you want to.